What are you doing right now? Perhaps you're in the supermarket. Maybe you're on a run or on the commute. But wherever you are in the world, and whatever you're doing, right now you're also listening to my voice. This is the power of podcasts. The ability to communicate with your audience in an intimate and intentional way through audio. I'm Bea Duncan, Senior Partnerships Producer at Intelligence Squared. We've been a world-leading forum for talks, debates, and events for over two decades. And we also use our cutting-edge curation, creativity, and editorial expertise to elevate your brand to new audiences with podcasting. Intrigued? To find out what we can do for your organization, book into a free consultation with me today. Find out more by going to www.intelligencesquared.com/partnerships.
Hello and welcome to Intelligence Squared. I'm producer Faye Adabita. For this bonus episode of the podcast, we're going to play you an installment of our new series, The Saudi Project. If you enjoy the episode, you can get all five episodes of the podcast now by becoming an Intelligence Squared member. For just $4.99 a month, you'll get access to the full series and much more. In this episode, we're looking at sport, and more specifically, football. It's looking very likely that Saudi Arabia will be host of the 2034 World Cup, with the kingdom now running as the sole bidder. Intelligence Squared's Connor Boyle wanted to know more. This is an excerpt of The Saudi Project, Episode 3, Football Mad.
You know what I think you're doing wrong? You're talking about all of this in your protest. This is what you're doing wrong, a protest.
They say St James's Park is a place of worship. Newcastle United's home is dubbed the Cathedral on the Hill. It's a religion here. But today's game doesn't feature the Magpies, but the national team of Saudi Arabia. Ever since that country bought the club 2 years ago, football has become much more political.
Shouldn't be protesting. We're all here to enjoy the Saudis' play.
Welcome to The Saudi Project with me, Connor Boyle, a series from Intelligence Squared exploring Saudi Arabia's pursuit of global power. One of the most visible and controversial areas of Saudi Arabia's ambitious goals for global reach is in sport. So in part three, I wanted to speak to James Montague, the journalist and author whose work focuses on the intersection of politics and sport. He's reported from over 80 countries and written books including The Billionaires Club, The Unstoppable Rise of Football's Super Rich Owners, and When Friday Comes, Football War and Revolution in the Middle East. I started off by asking him to describe, in his view, what is Saudi Arabia's relationship with sport?
Well, one, it never used to have a relationship with sport. Certainly not with football. It's quite a modern thing. I mean, Saudi Arabia is a fairly modern state, but until really the late 1970s, it didn't really have a football league. It didn't really have a national team that could really even get anywhere close to qualifying for any national tournaments. And it's quite an interesting kind of character to be involved in this story, because now we talk about Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince. We talk about fabulous wealth being thrown around. You talk about Saudi Arabia buying essentially Newcastle United. The intersection between kind of, you know, politics at the highest level in sport. And, you know, a figure that's very much at the beginning of this is Jimmy Hill.
Very exciting. I think it's that part of it really that appeals to me, that there is a clean sheet and on it you write the future history of a country's soccer. I think it's that opportunity that I find very exciting.
You know, Jimmy Hill gets hired in the late 70s to essentially, you know, build Saudi football. And he goes over there, you know, given a huge amount of cash and essentially builds what is today, you know, the Saudi Premier League. Like he builds it. The Saudi Professional League. So he goes there and builds it. And, he, you know, when you speak to older Saudi football fans, people within the Saudi football's kind of sporting makeup, he's kind of revered as the guy who could have, you know, he laid the groundwork and brought in kind of modern coaching methods. And they wouldn't have qualified, or certainly the people I've spoken to, they wouldn't have qualified for their first ever World Cup in 1994 in the US, which was my first introduction to Saudi football when England didn't qualify. And, you know, you're looking for underdog teams to look for. No one knew anything about Saudi Arabia. They qualified for the first time. And then Saeed Al-Arian, a player who no one had heard of, scores probably the greatest goal in World Cup history up there with Maradona's against England in 86. And yeah, so it's interesting that this much maligned figure in England, you know, has a kind of important part to play at the beginning of that story. So yeah, you know, it went from zero to, you know, 80 very quickly. And when you look at Saudi Arabian football over the past kind of 20, 30 years, and what's interesting, especially with Middle Eastern, when people talk about Middle Eastern football, especially around Qatar and the UAE, is they often say, oh, there's no football culture, or there's no, you know, there aren't 80,000 people turning up for these matches. In Saudi Arabia, there very much is. I mean, you've got, you know, probably the biggest Al-Hilal Ittihad, the Riyadh Jeddah Derby has for years been one of the biggest games in Asia, one of the biggest games in the world. And it's, so it has a deep football culture, but of course it's gone to the next level because of the amount of money and investment that's gone into it over the past, really in the past 2-3 years.
Lots of countries love football. I know you've done work in places like Egypt and Turkey, but they don't all invest billions upon billions into the game. Other than the love which is in Saudi Arabia for football, what do you think is driving the Saudi Arabian regime to go 100 miles an hour into sport as a place to invest in?
Yeah, I mean, one, Egypt doesn't have the money to make that kind of investment in football. Saudi Arabia does. It's one of the richest countries in the world, if not the richest. We're not even sure how rich the Al Saud dynasty really is. I mean, we don't know. Trillionaires, multiple trillionaires, you know, and they're getting richer. So they have the means. The reason why this is happening now, I think, and a lot of people talk about Mohammed bin Salman coming in and being a very malign influence, especially around Jamal Khashoggi, the restriction on kind of political rights in Saudi Arabia. When you look at, you know, the jailing of activists, the use of arrests and social media, the number of executions. But in terms of, there's also parallel to that is a kind of cultural revolution that's been taking place ever since he became kind of deputy crown prince in 2015, which is on the one hand, increased control, but on the other hand, realizing that there's a young population that needs to be moved away from dependency on oil and an oil economy, a diversification. And for that to happen, there has to be a kind of cultural opening for young people. So it's not just been sport, it's been everything from like, I mean, I first visited in 2008, and the idea that you'd have cinemas that would return to Saudi Arabia would be incredible, that women would be uncovered, that they would wear, that they would drive cars, that they would be able to go, there'd be concerts taking place, music, live music. You know, no one would be able to see that coming. And this has been something that is, every time you think about what's going on in Saudi Arabia, there is an international element, of course, about how the country positions itself, and also a rebranding effort that's needed, because Mohammed bin Salman in particular was probably, you know, probably after the Khashoggi murder, was the most tainted brand in the world. But for a domestic audience, the investment in sport is an entertainment option and something for young people as a kind of a quid pro quo for all the other, let's say, political restrictions that are going on. A cultural opening, you know, coupled with more control over, you know, the levers of power. And so that's the prism I think we should look at these sporting investments.
And that's a really good example of how sport is changing Saudi, and that it's kind of opening it up, at least culturally. It's giving people more on entertainment options. But how do you think Saudi money is going to change sport? I mean, it feels like, you know, we've got F1, golf, football. It seems there's an insatiable, yeah. It's every sport that seems to be going for.
Fundamentally, it's going to change, you know, at the moment it changes the economics of every sport. So there's more money, and when you have more money, whoever's, you know, paying the piper plays the tune. They have the money and they can ask for whatever it is they want. They can have Riyadh season, they can have the Ngannou Tyson fight, Tyson Fury fight, and the Usyk fight that's coming up next year. They can demand where that takes place. But I think more fundamentally, once you have captured an industry, and money does that very quickly in sport, especially in football, then you start to change the rules, and you can start to change the situation to benefit you, in a more effective way. One of the most interesting things actually was one of the first attempts to kind of ingratiate themselves into, or to really place themselves at the center of the sport, was a very often forgotten incident from a few years ago where Gianni Infantino, you know, went to his FIFA council, I think it was in 2017, and basically said he was newly elected.
Thanks for listening to The Saudi Project. If you want to hear the whole of that episode, number 3, Football Mad, you can get access to the full series now by supporting our work and becoming a member of Intelligence Squared for just $4.99 on Apple Podcasts or by visiting intelligencesquared.com/membership. Thanks again for all your support.
What are you doing right now? Perhaps you're in the supermarket. Maybe you're on a run or on the commute. But wherever you are in the world, and whatever you're doing, right now you're also listening to my voice. This is the power of podcasts. The ability to communicate with your audience in an intimate and intentional way through audio. I'm Bea Duncan, Senior Partnerships Producer at Intelligence Squared. We've been a world-leading forum for talks, debates, and events for over 2 decades. And we also use our cutting-edge curation, creativity, and editorial expertise to elevate your brand to new audiences with podcasting. Intrigued? To find out what we can do for your organization, book into a free consultation with me today. Find out more by going to www.intelligencesquared.com/partnerships.